5, 4, 3, 2.
Death kill, murder, death kill, murder, death kill. We got three
death kill,
murder, death kills.
Code 187. What's code 187?
Murder, death kill,
murder, death kill.
And that's straight from the Demolition Man soundtrack. Yep. Everybody, retconned 30 years now, yeah, into the future.
Yep,
because that's how old the movie we're talking about today is.
It is. Yeah.
Welcome into the Radcast, everyone, to where we are kicking off, we're finally kicking off the movie review portion of Sly July.
Yes, hopefully you enjoyed our ramble,
mm-hmm,
that we put out on Monday.
Yeah, the day that this is dropping.
So we have two episodes releasing this week.
Uh-huh, yeah. Didn't plan it that way.
That's okay.
But, well, we planned it. It's a whole thing. If you listen to, like Matt said, we rambled a little bit at the beginning of Sly July here on an episode that dropped on Monday, July 10th,
mm-hmm,
to where we went over some of Sly's releases in the 90s, and kind of the criteria for that was, A, we were just going off of the trailer,
because
yes, it was his movies from the 90s we had never seen,
yep,
nor had never covered on any of our podcasts, or are going to cover in any of the Sly July episodes.
Right.
So you had movies like Oscar, Cliffhanger, Assassins,
yeah, ones
the
we're
Specialist.
Not going to cover.
Right, yeah, yeah, ones we're not going to cover, never seen.
Had so a couple Frank Stallone movies in
there. A couple Frank Stallone movies in there where we just watched the trailers and we gave our ideas and synopses of the plot, how we think the movie ended up, just,
yeah,
based upon the trailers and on some of those, some still shots from the movie.
Mm-hmm. Which you won't see because this, yeah, is an audio medium.
We did a good job of describing things.
I think so.
But today we are kicking off, again, the movie review portion of Sly July with the 1993 cult classic and just a blast of an action movie.
Yes,
no pun intended.
No pun intended.
Demolition Man.
Yep.
But before all that, Matt, why don't you let everyone know where they can find us?
You can find us, as far as social media goes, you can find us just on Instagram. We are at the Radcast. Cast spelled with a K. Rad. Radcast spelled with a K. Red. My brain just switched off.
Yeah.
Cast. Radcast, all one word. Cast spelled with a K.
Mm-hmm.
And then for podcast apps, you can find us on all major podcast apps, Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcast, all of them, and wherever applicable, please rate and review. Give us 5 stars. It really helps us out.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Matt, will we be joining the Threads trend?
I don't know. I've seen stuff about it,
mm-hmm,
and I didn't really know what it was until like last night.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure. I don't, yeah, know. Maybe. I mean, as far as I've heard, it's a more fun Twitter.
Mm.
Like, there's not as much toxicity on there, but it's only a matter of time.
Yeah, it's a quote unquote, I guess, brainchild. It's a copy of Twitter,
yeah,
but it's from Mark Zuckerberg, who we all know created the least toxic social media platform,
yeah,
on the internet, Facebook.
Facebook, yeah, exactly. It's a place where people can civilly discuss just,
yeah,
about anything.
Yeah, unlike in the year of 2032, where they don't understand sarcasm anymore. That,
yeah,
was sarcasm.
Yes, yes.
You all understand that, because this is 2023, and just the what would you say the inversion of that is 2032?
Yeah,
yeah. So
yeah,
yeah. So let's get into Demolition Man.
Yes.
So Demolition Man, like we had said, it's going to be celebrating its 30th anniversary this year. It was released October 8th, 1993. Directed by Marco Brambilla, he's an artiste.
Yes.
He's like a graphic artist. He's a visual artist, not graphic.
Okay.
He's a visual artist.
There's a lot that makes sense there, because the set pieces and the visual,
mm-hmm,
effects are pretty interesting in this movie.
Oh yeah. starring Sylvester Stallone as John Spartan. Mm-hmm. It's always John something.
Yeah.
John Rambo.
Yeah.
John Spartan.
John Truckosaurus.
John Truckosaurus. We're talking the John Cena classic. Yeah. John Triton in The Marine.
The Marine.
Wesley Snipes as Simon Phoenix. Sandra Bullock as Lenita Huxley.
We know it's Bullock.
Yeah, exactly. We always call her Bullock, but it's Bullock.
We mispronounce people's names on purpose.
Mm-hmm, if you're just joining us.
Yes.
First of all, thank you for joining
us.
And go listen to our other 127 episodes, not including our re-releases or bonuses.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully you enjoy this episode. Nigel Hawthorne as Raymond Cocteau.
Sir Nigel Hawthorne.
Sir Nigel Hawthorne. He was also the voice of Jane's father and Disney's Tarzan movie. Benjamin Bratt as Alfredo Garcia. Bob Gunton as Chief George Earl. He's the warden from Shawshank Redemption. Character actor.
Yeah.
Glenn Shaddix as Bob. Dennis Leary as Edgar Friendly, with Bill Cobbs as older Zachary Lamb. Mm-hmm. Dan Cortez. As the Taco Bell entertainer. Rob Schneider as Irwin, Jesse Ventura as one of the thugs thawed from his cryo slumber, and a young Jack Black as a nameless member of the scavenger crew.
Is that confirmed? I think I saw in the trivia that he was supposed to be.
That's Jack Black.
Okay.
I'm almost positive it's Jack Black. Right. Box office of $58 million on an estimated $56 million budget. So, at least according to these numbers, contrary to what popular belief might be, it didn't make a whole lot of money.
Oh yeah, this is more of a cult classic. Yeah.
Oh yeah. So what was on the VHS? And more than likely, it made a lot of money on VHS and got a lot of popularity because of VHS rentals, because of
probably played on TV,
played on cable.
Yep.
So what was on the VHS of Demolition Man? They didn't have the original VHS open from the 1993 release, or is more than likely released on VHS in 1994.
Yeah.
But they did have the demo VHS for Demolition Man.
Oh, okay.
Which, you know, shows a little bit more of some of the other releases for maybe the production company.
Right.
Some releases that may appeal to those watching Demolition Man.
Yeah.
And gives, like, you know, made millions of box office rentals and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's like, has pay-per-view protection for the next 3 years.
Oh, yeah.
Stuff like that.
When you just said probably wasn't released until 1994. It just occurred to me that, like, movies never stay in theaters for very long anymore.
Yeah.
Because, like, when a movie came out to theaters, it was there for months.
Oh, yeah.
Like, Titanic, I think, played in theaters for a year straight.
Of course.
So, yeah, it's crazy now. Like, you see a movie is in theaters, and then 2 weeks later, it's like, oh, it's on streaming.
Yeah.
Which is fine. It's not a complaint.
And now, ever since COVID, sometimes it will release on streaming in conjunction with the theater release.
Yeah.
The newest Spider-Verse movie released on streaming the same day as it in theaters.
Yeah. So it's nice. It gives you the option. Like, if you don't want to go to the theater, you can stream it.
Yeah. And I know there's this almost prevailing mentality now. I won't say how universal it is, but there's this mentality ever since COVID that people just still don't want to go to the movies.
Yeah.
I mean, there have been movies that have come out since then that I'm like, that appeals to me. I'd like to go out, but there's still something magical about the theater experience
that
has always just stuck with me since I was a kid.
Yep.
And when you mentioned you had to wait a while, that was my awareness of how long you had to wait for a movie from the theaters to come out on VHS and DVD.
Mm-hmm.
Really awakened in 2002 after we saw Spider-Man.
Yep, anxiously awaiting for that to come out so we could own it.
Yep, exactly. But this time, speaking of VHS, the what was on the VHS, it's the demo VHS, and the first thing is Airborne. So some of you listening may or may not remember that movie. It's a little known 90s, like 90s movie in the vein of like the kind of the extreme sports mixed with like these like teen rebels.
Yeah.
And like it's surrounding these high school, these teenagers who like, and in this movie, a surfer from California who moves out of his element to a colder climate. And he gains popularity through like inline skating or something like that. I remember seeing it on TV as a kid.
It's like Brink.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I vaguely remember parts from Airborne. Yeah. I remember liking it as like a 5-year-old.
Oh, sure.
But I haven't watched it since then.
But little known 90s movie.
Yeah.
And when you know people mm-hmm. who know it, it's like, you know that movie?
Also a young Jack Black is in Airborne. Yep. Seth Green is in it.
Yep.
Airborne for freestyling teen rebels. It's Don LaFontaine doing the voiceover.
What was that like seeing the scenes from it in the trailer? Was it like, whoa, this looks cool?
Well, yeah. We try to put ourselves in certain people's shoes at certain time periods to get their perspectives. And I put myself in the shoes of like a 12-year-old, 1993, being like, whoa, this movie looks cool. Rad, if you will.
Yeah.
Apparently.
Apropos.
Yeah, apparently there's a rollerblading chase scene.
I remember that, I think.
Yeah, in the movie that one reviewer said is the French Connection of rollerblade chases. French Connection, if you're not aware, is one of the more famous elements to the movie. Is there's a chase scene mm-hmm. that was kind of a revolutionary for the time, especially in the 1970s.
Yeah, kind of started it all for car chases, or mm-hmm. at least it set the standard.
Yeah. And a soundtrack of top teen hits, and one of the bands was the Steve Miller Band. So I was like, top teen hits, like from the Steve Miller Band.
You know, he was huge in the 90s.
Yep. And then there's a advertisement for Demolition Man, which it's more so advertising like what the movie's about, of course. Yeah. But then also some of the accolades that the stars like Sly Stallone and Wesley Snipes have. Sly's video rental revenue equaled $500 million.
Jeez.
Wesley Snipes's equaled $300 million.
Yeah.
These big names in here. All the reviews they give mention the comedic elements, how it's mm-hmm. hilarious and an action comedy, and it has pay-per-view protection. So I'm guessing it's just a certain amount of years that it will always be available on pay-per-view, would be my guess. And it's the right before the movie starts, it's the Warner Home Video title card where it's like, da-da-da, 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 that's like the Batman Forever.
Yep.
But also the 1998 VHS release is a montage of hit Warner Brother movies from the WB 75th Anniversary Collection, which, that being 25 years ago, it's celebrating 100 years. The Warner Brothers Studios is celebrating 100 years this year.
Dang.
So I'm guessing this is from the Demolition Man WB 75th Anniversary Collection. So you'll get movies like The Triple Bill of Casablanca, Unforgiven, and Space Jam.
Ah, yes, of course. That's everyone's movie nights.
Oh, yeah. And the whole montage ends with the scene of Batman breaking through the roof during the Enigma Tech party and Batman Forever.
Okay.
So Demolition Man, a lot of people, we had mentioned earlier this week on our last episode, Sly's 90s wasn't the best.
It's kind of up and down.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, he's coming out of the 80s. Like, pretty much every 80s movie he did was an action movie, mm-hmm. and it was, like, in the mold of what 80s action movies were. Super, you know, macho, explosions, like, mm-hmm. macho characters, mm-hmm. one-liners. Like, it was a certain mold for action movies in mm-hmm. the 80s that, like, every action movie followed.
Yeah.
And Sly and Arnold were, like, the two top guys. He comes in the 90s, and he's doing more comedic things
mm-hmm.
while also doing, like, action. He's just kind of running the gamut of genres.
Yeah. So at the beginning of the 90s, he did Rocky V, which we defended in mm-hmm. an earlier Radcast episode. Go back and check it out. And he started really with comedies, the movie Oscar, Stop Where My Mom Will Shoot. But then he kind of had in the face of everybody saying, is Sly's career done, he did Cliffhanger.
Yeah,
Which was very successful. And then later that year, he did Demolition Man.
Movie.
And a lot of people, you know, they say Cliffhanger, sure, Cliffhanger's a good movie, but Demolition Man is the one that holds up best.
Sure.
It is the definition, especially within the 90s. It's the definition of a popcorn movie.
Oh, yeah. I attribute that to practical effects
mm-hmm.
as well as just, it's pretty rewatchable.
Mm-hmm.
And the plot is, like, it's fun. It's not like cookie cutter mm-hmm. kind of thing.
Yeah. And it's pretty fluid in the fact that it's a broad enough plot in a way to where when you add these futuristic elements, you can make commentaries on things that still can be relevant today.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Oh, kind of
like how, like, if you read 1984 by Aldous Huxley, or no, Brave New World.
Sorry. Which this movie's kind of inspired
by. 1984, yeah. George Orwell, yeah. And then Brave New World by Aldous Huxley. You read those books and you still see things like Big Brother.
Oh,
you
yeah.
still see things that could be considered
fascist.
Fascist, that's what I'm thinking
yeah,
of.
Yeah.
Yeah, fascist. Like the tracking people.
Yeah.
And maintaining this utopia that's being presented to you as this perfect
world. It's what's best for you.
Yeah, we're telling you what's best for you. And then the people who were born after that quote-unquote regime started,
yeah.
they don't know any different.
Right.
So the people who are seen as the most dangerous to society are the free thinkers.
Yeah.
And in this movie, it's the scavenger crew that Dennis Leary, these underdwellers that Dennis Leary leads.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's done, you, so many movies take that concept of like, we start, the movie starts in this, you know, to use the phrase, the antithetical version of this dystopian look at
1996.
You know, the future comparatively to when the movie was made, which it was made in the midst of the Rodney King riots.
Yeah.
So, or at the end, kind of after, while the riots, there's,
Los Angeles was still feeling the effects of Rodney King riots.
Los Angeles was burning around that time. So their idea of the future is this really like nihilistic look at it, to where like the city is eating itself. Everything's burning around. Crime is on the rise. It's these kingpins who are running the city. And less we're seeing these heroic police officers who, or I guess authority figures, who are willing to take down the bad guys and stuff like that. And
just kind of let it exist, keep things from going in and out of there. And basically just let the crime syndicates that live there just exist. And the best we can do at this point is just, like you said, let them eat. Let Los Angeles, let L.A. eat itself kind of thing.
So if anything, too, it's this, in a way, really blown up version of like what the city will become based upon the violence we've seen in the early 90s.
Yep.
So that when you see the comparison of 2032, when we get there, and it's this prim and proper, perfect world that we're led to believe.
Oh yeah.
The differences are more apparent.
Yeah.
When you're using the most over the top.
Yeah.
Example of dystopia, the utopia that they're presenting, that the world has become in the future, what's supposed to be, you know, the better way of life. There's a lot more. Like, it's a greater opposite to one another.
Yeah, and they're even in the utopia of 2032, you can still get, like, seedy underdwelling.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking about, like, the scraps. I'm talking about, like, Cocteau, like, Dr. Cocteau.
Yeah.
And, like, you still have people who are acting within their own self-interest. It just looks different than it did back in the, quote-unquote, barbaric age of the 20th century.
Yeah, it has... keep going.
No, I was going to say, and when they talk about, when they describe how barbaric time was before the big event of 2010, like, there was, like, an earthquake.
Like, a big, like, earthquake.
Yeah, and that's where Cocteau was like, I need to make a new society or whatever. Whenever they describe the past, it sounds like a wasteland, which is crazy, because it's crazy to watch these movies that put the future only, like, 3 or 4 years after the actual movie was made, as if 1996 or 1997 is going to have all these technological advances that they, that these movies say they will. So, but in 1996, the big crime syndicate, like the baddest of the bad, is Simon Phoenix
is Wesley Snipes. So Sylvester Stallone plays John Spartan, who's been, you know, he's had this cat and mouse relationship with Simon Phoenix for years, and he's known as the Demolition Man, because the way that he either saves people or takes care of the bad guy is he causes mass destruction.
Yeah, exactly.
So he...
running, like...
Yes.
Phoenix!
Yeah,
when he descends from the helicopter.
When he's saying his name.
Drago!
Yeah, exactly. But he lands Got to send a maniac to catch a maniac.
Exactly. That's what he says before he descends from the, or rappels, if you will, like much like Sting in 1997 WCW.
Yeah.
Rappels from the helicopter, which I mentioned the character Zachary Lamb earlier. It's being flown by a young Zachary Lamb, who Bill Cobbs plays the older Zachary Lamb. Yep. So he knows what John Spartan is like. Getting ahead of ourselves here.
Yeah.
And if you're listening, you more than likely would have seen the movie. There's only a few of you that just tune in just to hear the two of us talk.
Just for us, yeah.
So you know that he falls to the ground. Again, use the word wasteland. Simon Phoenix's people are all around. This is a prime example of an action movie to where people are... It's the most unrealistic portrayal of people shooting assault rifles and weapons.
They just completely... They miss every shot, mm-hmm. and they have, like you said, assault rifles, mm-hmm. and Uzis and stuff, and Sly just has handguns, mm-hmm. and he's taking them out one shot kind of thing. You just suspend your disbelief.
Yeah.
And again, this is a popcorn action mm-hmm. movie.
Exactly. Like, it's supposed to be fun. These movies are supposed to be fun. You're supposed to, in a way, turn your brain off.
Oh, yeah.
Because you don't want to turn your brain off when you start to see the commentary it has on... And the future, and it's a commentary on the future through the lens of like 1993, but it's still prevalent to this day.
Oh, yeah.
And we'll kind of get into that.
Yeah.
But he lands, he takes out these Simon Phoenix thugs, and he goes into this giant abandoned building to where Simon Phoenix apparently has taken, you know, dozens of people hostage that were on a bus.
Yeah, because he said, the mailman knows not to come here. Mm-hmm. Like, all these people know not to come here, but someone didn't tell that bus driver.
Mm-hmm.
So he's got hostages.
Yeah.
And Sly is sent, goes in there to try and rescue the hostages, mm-hmm. but also he's got this agenda to take down Simon Phoenix.
Mm-hmm. So essentially they have their witty repartee, and they have great back and forth in this movie. Wesley Snipes is great.
Wesley Snipes is a scene-chewing, cartoonish villain,
just like we would hope.
Yeah, exactly. Who also poses a menacing threat.
It's a mix of Willie Mays Hayes and his character from New Jack City.
Yeah,
like the sinister aspect of that, but also, you know, kind of the goofy humor of Willie Mays Hayes, but he's still to be taken seriously because he's a dangerous man.
I will say they do try and cram a lot of one-liners in this movie, and some of them kind of feel forced.
Yeah. Some of the attempts at, like, Sly, you know, being tongue-in-cheek and witty are like, meh.
Yeah. Eh. Most of the performances are good. Mm-hmm. Some of Sly's acting, you can tell in this movie he's having fun.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, later interviews have proved that he does like this movie.
Yeah.
So you can't say, like, it looks like he's having fun. Oh, he's actually miserable. Other people on the set weren't a huge fan of him. But... you can tell he's having fun, but some of his line delivery is a little wonky, kind of flat.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And we'll definitely get more into that when he finds his way into the future.
Oh, sure.
But he finds Simon Phoenix, and they have their back and forth, and they fight a little bit. And essentially, John Spartan doesn't think the hostages are there, but Simon Phoenix is saying, like, oh, well, you don't know that. He's like, what hostages? What are you talking about? Like, just being snarky.
Yeah.
And because he did, like... he did thermal traces, and he said he only found there was only 8 readings. Phoenix and his thugs. So now my main priority is I need to apprehend Simon Phoenix.
Yeah.
So he jumps with them out of the window as the building's blowing up because Simon Phoenix rigged it
with
blow.
Gasoline. Uh-huh. Yeah.
And he gets down, and Simon Phoenix is being taken away, and he's still spouting off like one-liners to Sly and getting under skin.
I'd forget my head if it wasn't attached to my shoulders.
Yeah,
and Sly's like, I'll remember that.
Yep,
and he does.
It's foreshadowing.
Yeah.
But he gets down there, and of course it's the typical, you know, police captain who's like chiding him and like giving him the third degree.
Yeah.
And then, damn it, Spartan, like, you always play by your own rules.
Yeah,
and
you
can't be blowing shit up. And but what about the hostages? He's like, they had 8 thermals. I did thermal scans, only 8, you know.
He's got them stored somewhere else.
Yeah, they're somewhere else. And then a firefighter comes out, and he says, you know, there's bodies everywhere, dozens of them.
Yeah.
And John Spartan finds out that
those are the hostages.
Those are the hostages. But it now,
yeah.
I will say now, I'm going to give it away now,
yeah.
that the reason thermal scans didn't pick up on it is Simon Phoenix reveals later in the movie when it's almost over
they were already dead. Yep.
So if you're listening and ask, well, why didn't they pick up thermal scans if they were already there? They were already dead. However, at this point in the movie,
there you go. Yeah.
John Spartan doesn't know that, and he is charged with
involuntary manslaughter.
Yeah, 30 charges of involuntary manslaughter. And the way that they incarcerate people now is they cryogenically freeze them.
Yeah.
And with the purpose of when parole comes up or something like that, they will.
They've attached synaptic suggestion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For behavioral engineering, for rehab, for rehabilitation.
Essentially,
purposes.
While they're under, mm-hmm. their brain is being rewired in the name of rehabilitation.
Yeah. So since they're being frozen, they'll more than likely be released. But when they're released back into society, they're going to be not dangerous.
Oh, yeah. There's new skills introduced to their brain that coincide with genetic disposition and stuff like that. So, Sly is about to be cryogenically frozen because he's being charged with involuntary manslaughter.
Mm-hmm.
And when he comes out, he's got the knowledge of a seamstress kind of thing. He knits Sandra Bullock a sweater at one point. And he's like, when I came out, all I wanted to do was knit.
Yeah.
How come I know? And he's naming all these sewing terms and stuff. He's like, how do I know all that stuff?
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a lot of things that unfold as the movie doesn't give it to you right out.
That's something that I really, really like is they use exposition really well. You know, like you said, it unfolds. Because
I had to watch it twice.
Yeah.
And in the second viewing, I'm like, oh, explains all these things.
I try
things.
To watch movies without, if I don't know something right away, and this is sometimes annoying when watching movies with people, if something's not presented right away and something seems odd, I'm not going to be like, what's that? What's that? Who's that?
Yeah.
And that's sometimes annoying with watching movies with people. I'm not speaking of anybody in particular.
No.
So if you're listening, I'm not talking about you.
Everyone has that experience with friends and stuff.
Who's that? What's that? Wait, what's going on?
Yeah.
I just want to sit there and watch it unfold. And if at the end of the movie, the end of the movie, you still have those questions,
then we can
discuss it and look up Wikipedia. And if neither one of us saw it, but just sitting there, let the movie unfold. I applauded it because I was like, nice. I like how it was brought up before right before the third act started.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay.
And it's little things throughout the movie that help explain how things function in that society.
Yeah.
And any questions you had, pretty much any question I had upon first viewing, as the movie went on, I was like, oh, okay, that explains this. Explains this. It's pretty, the movie does a pretty good job of storytelling and keeping things kind of simple, not trying to convolute and send it off in these different directions and have it. There's not walls of texts.
Yeah.
If you're reading a comic book, walls of text explaining exposition, there's not just one monologue the whole movie that explains everything up to that point.
Yeah.
It gives you little bits here and there.
Yeah. One of, especially with these futuristic narratives that, at this point, people who wrote something in the 70s and say the future is 2012, we, of course, now we can pick out what was right and what was just terribly wrong about
it. Oh, yeah.
But it's them kind of their perception of what it would be based upon the commentary they're trying to make. So sometimes the problem they can have is getting overly verbose, overly cerebral with it, to where you yourself, your commentary gets lost in your wordiness and how you're trying to explain certain things and how you're presenting your commentary. But like you said, this was pretty straightforward.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it presented ideas that if you didn't pick up on it before, someone like the first encounter, or the encounter with Edgar Friendly in the third act, where they, him and
Dennis Leary.
Edgar Friendly. Dennis Leary's character.
Edgar Friendly.
It's essentially Dennis Leary, because Edgar Friendly was written differently, but then they were like, if we cast Dennis Leary, we want him to bring
rant.
His ranting form of plagiarized humor.
Yeah.
Which
at the time we didn't know is plagiarized.
Yeah.
But anywho.
And if not fully plagiarized, he's doing Bill Hicks.
Yeah.
That's what Bill Hicks did.
Yeah.
But anyway, ranting's not new either. George Carlin ranted too.
Yeah, exactly.
But
neither here nor there.
This is not an episode about Dennis Leary.
Yeah. So even if you don't pick up on, you know, what they're trying to say with their commentary and how it's still relevant to whenever you're watching it, Dennis Leary pretty much lays out what him and you, they're called the Scraps.
Yeah.
But him and the Scraps, what their agenda is, what their MO is inside this new perfect world.
Oh, yeah. And in this utopia, Dr. Cocteau, who is the mastermind of it all, and basically wants to control people and how and their behavior and all that stuff. But it's presented, again, as this utopian society.
Yeah.
He paints them at the beginning of the movie as, like, they're rebellious, they're thugs, they're criminals. Mm-hmm. Like, that's why, like, they're subterranean. That's why they live in the sewers. Like, they aim just to disrupt our peace and, you know, this harmonious society.
Yeah.
But there's more than meets the eye.
Yeah, exactly. So if now where we're at in the story, we fast forward to August 3rd, 2032, our 41st birthday. Simon Phoenix is up for parole, and he is talking to the warden. I guess how it's still considered the warden.
Yeah.
In Spanish.
It's the same. He was the assistant warden.
Yeah, when John Spartan 1996.
Yeah.
And he's calling, you know, Simon Phoenix, of course, like a brute and a troublemaker and blah, blah, blah. And then all of a sudden, Simon Phoenix is able to break out of his
restraints.
Yeah. And he kills. He kills everybody that's that's in front of him.
Which up to that point, the last murder, occurred in 2010.
Yeah, last murder, last death of not natural causes occurred in 2010.
Yeah.
And in this time, we also see Sandra Bullock's character, Lenina Huxley, who she's this young member of the San Angeles police force.
Yeah.
And we see right out of the gate that not only do we see these utopian-looking, pristine set pieces, they also speak differently as well.
It's like, it's very dweeby. It's like super, like, polite and be well. And
yeah, so, super saccharine, proper, elegant, and this formal sheen put on everything. It's this perception of perfection.
Oh, yeah, because part of the utopia is, like, basically anything that is not good for you is illegal.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, no profanity, caffeine, alcohol, contact sports, meat, chocolate, gasoline, like, all those things are outlawed. They're illegal, so without all those things, people become, like, super sanitized, and they essentially don't have much personality.
Yeah.
Like, basically, even Simon Phoenix, towards the end, was like, you can't take away people's rights to be assholes kind of thing. Essentially just taking away that choice.
Yeah.
Like, there's an illusion of choice, but there's a lot of things that have been made illegal.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's no... Like, basically takes away your freedom of speech and your ability to think for yourself and, like, make, you know, the same as you deserve to have the freedom to make good choices, you should be able to make bad choices too.
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of like, it's kind of like that.
Yeah.
And they have, like, this little system in place around the entire city to where if you say any sort of profanity, you get ticketed.
Yeah.
And so that's used... That's threaded throughout the whole movie, and I give the movie credit. Like, it could have just dropped it off.
Yeah.
Like, towards the end of the movie or in the climax, because there's a lot of, like, profanity in this movie. And a running gag like that could have dropped off, but it's threaded pretty well throughout the movie.
Oh, yeah.
Even in the background when Simon is in the museum and he's saying, like, shit and fuck and stuff, it's not, like, you don't hear the and the... You know, right up.
There's no like focus on
it. Yeah, but you hear it in the background, like, know, profanity. You know, you've been charged one credit or something like that. You know,
they're not always bringing attention to it. Yeah. Of course, when it's right,
it's always present.
Yeah, when it's for the joke of that being a thing, they'll bring attention to it. But like when Simon's in there, he's just walking around swearing, and it keeps going off, and it's not like he's like looking. He's like, "Will you shut the fuck up?" Like, it's not that. He's not paying any mind to it. It's just happening, and I like that.
Oh yeah. Just to double back a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
When you don't know yet why Simon has been freed, and when his restraints come off, one of the guards, like, he catches one of the guards, and the guard is like, "How did you know, like, the PIN number?" He's like, you know, I don't know. And then he basically kills them.
Yeah.
But you're like, what's good? Because you know there's some sort of, there's something going on.
Yeah.
Like that these things are just happening. And then he goes, you know, to downtown and he's like on the computer down there. And he's just like pulling up all these things. And he's like, geez, what's going on? It's like, maybe I can play the accordion, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah. And he sells that really well.
Oh, yeah.
Too.
And he has voices in his head that's like, you know the name Edgar Friendly. It's like, you hear the voice. It's like, you know what you need to do. So someone has implanted this this objective in his head and has given him all this knowledge that he didn't know he had.
Mm-hmm. So that's really cool because, you know, it's not like the movie tries to tell you, oh, he knows already. We see he doesn't know, and he even, like, his nonverbal show, like, it's he's like, confused what's going on.
I don't know what I'm doing, but I like
and
that I'm doing
his answer is, like, I don't know. So the audience is like, well, what's going on? Like, maybe the most perceptive of viewers will be able to pick up on it based upon, you know, the engineering inside the brain that they're doing. But when I was watching it and they did the reveal, I was like, oh, that's very clever. And I like that.
And if you're it's one of those things when you're watching the first time, something like the synapsis thing that they attach to prisoners to rehabilitate them. There's so much going on that you don't know. Like the second time I was like, oh, that explains this because later Sylvester Stallone brings it up, like John Spartan. Jesus, Matrix
John,
is Commando.
John Matrix Commando.
John Spartan. Sorry, so many. Every action star's name was John.
Yeah.
Our character's name was John. He brings it up, and I'm like, is this the first time they're like bringing up this concept? It's like, no, it was introduced.
Yeah.
So, if you're paying attention, maybe you're drawing that conclusion when he's like, oh, what's going on?
You know, kind of thing. That's why it's so cool because some, like, the commentary elements or some of the more clever elements, you can see how it's like, oh, thing go boom now type mentality, which many would think distracts and blah, blah, blah. It does its job of distracting, but also you give it props for when it comes back around to the more, like, cerebral element and you're like, oh, yeah. See, I'd forgotten about that. Now that I remember, bravo movie.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we also see the character of Lenina Huxley, who she's making her way into work. She's this young
Sandra Bullock.
And we see she has a little bit as much of a quote unquote negative edge you can have in something like this utopian society.
Oh, yeah.
I know we're using that word ad nauseum.
Since there's no crime, like it's so boring.
Yeah.
Being police officers are peacekeepers.
Yeah. And
like Rob Schneider even has a line, and I'm glad he didn't get a lot of screen time because I can't stand Rob Schneider. But he had a line like when they're all observing at the police station because they send out police officers to apprehend Simon Phoenix and like they don't know how to apprehend, like the police officer has like is consulting a little computer. He's like, how do I use aggression against someone? Mm-hmm. And she's like, you know, ask them to get down on the ground and put their hands behind their back, you know, and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And they don't know how to handle this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny, Rob Schneider has a line where he's like, we're police officers. We're not trained to handle this kind of violence.
Yeah.
Because Simon Phoenix is just whooping ass.
Mm-hmm. And Simon Phoenix is incarcerated in the cryogenic, in his little cryogenic chamber, before they instituted the whole chip thing, so they can't track him.
Yeah.
So that's another thing as well.
Cocteau sews chips, like microchips, into people, essentially to track their movements.
Yeah, to track their movements, track their behavior, to ensure nobody's going outside of the law of this perfect society.
Yeah.
Which is fascist.
Oh, yeah.
And it's
you try and dictate what everyone's going to do, track their movements.
Big Brother is watching you.
Yeah, essentially. But Lenina Huxley, Sandra Bullock's character, has this obsession with the 20th century.
Yeah. Like, she wants action because she has this deep knowledge and affection and also obsession with the 20th century, especially the 90s. And then kind of the, in a way, she's obsessed with the bleakness and brutality of the 20th century. So when I compared to the peaceful and sanitized version of the 21st century, which when I saw that, it reminds me of these people who are obsessed with the heinous deeds of serial killers.
Yeah.
Like, it seems like she fetishizes the 20th century, including having sex with our protagonist out of time.
Yeah.
Which is a quote unquote iconic scene. It's one of the more famous scenes in the movie.
To which sex nowadays, like, there's also no like exchanging of bodily fluids.
Right.
They don't even high five each other. Mm-hmm. No one kisses. Yeah. So like sex is done like virtual reality.
Yeah.
They have virtual reality headsets to put on. And it is one of the more, if you want to watch Sylvester Stallone make borderline orgasmic faces, this is the, go ahead and YouTube this scene.
Yeah. If you'd like. I was uncomfortable.
It's kind of surreal.
Yeah. Especially knowing that.
Oh, sorry, doctor. What's going on in my head?
That's how it sounds.
Yeah, that's why it's weird. Yeah.
But all of her knowledge of the 20th century comes up a lot.
Yeah.
And it comes with phrases of the 20th century that one of the running gags is she keeps messing it up and John Spartan is correcting her.
Yeah. You really licked his ass. It's like, kicked his ass.
Yeah.
It's like, let's go blow this guy. It's
away. Blow him away.
Like stuff like that.
There are a few like exasperated line deliveries that remind you like this is supposed to have some comedy infused in it.
Take this job and shovel it.
He's like, good enough.
He's like, did you say take this job and shovel it? She's like, yeah. He's like, close enough.
Yeah. So it's really funny with like their character development too, because their chemistry is pretty good.
Yeah.
But essentially, everybody sees we were being silly at the beginning, doing like the murder, death, kill song from the soundtrack.
Yeah. Which is on the soundtrack.
But it comes up with a code 187 that everybody in the police station is being made aware of, and Lenina looks it up, and she sees this murder, death, kill, and they're seeing all around where like the containment units were, and then outside of the police station, all these murder death kills are going on. There's also these kind of these underground spray paint mechanisms that pop up in the spray paint things. And
I said there is no crime, but she comes in, she's like, any action? And there's a guy's like, oh yes, eventful morning. There was defacement of public property, which is cleaned up immediately.
Yeah. And when that happens, we see our first shot of Edgar Friendly looking through a periscope at like this food drop off. And we get this, you know, idea that these scraps, all they want is, it seems like they're going to be ne'er-do-wells.
Yeah. Just because they're painted that way.
Yeah. Because they're painted that way. But then we see later on in the scene at the fancy Taco Bell, when John Spartan first encounters them, that they just want food.
Oh, yeah.
They're just coming up to get food.
Oh, yeah. Because he's ready to, and he is like whooping ass and stuff, and he's ready for like people to be hostile. And he grabs a guy, and the guy's like, no, please. And he like lets him go, and like some food falls out of his pocket. Mm-hmm. He's like, wait a second. You know, so things are starting to unfold to where because he's a man from a free thinking era for the most part.
Yeah.
He's in this world. He starts to pick up on like the cocktail stuff. He's like, this is even when they were like, when, cause so Spartan gets reintroduced because they can't stop Simon Phoenix. Mm-hmm. They're like, who's the last person to stop this guy? And they're like, well, I almost said John Matrix again, John Spartan.
Yeah.
And so they take him out of stasis, and they're describing what society is like now. And he's like, I'm not on board with this fascist bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
So he like right away is like, there's something not right about any of this.
Yeah. So they've given him temporary parole so that he can help them catch Simon Phoenix.
Cause
Cocktail says, you know, use whatever he tells, the police chief.
Yeah, he's to use any means necessary to get him.
Yeah, but the police chief out of the gate hates that it was Huxley's idea.
Yeah.
He hates that.
They call him a barbarian. Yeah. They call him a caveman, like stuff like that.
But he is retrofitting his kind of way of doing things, trying to in this new society.
Oh yeah.
And
sort of the fish out of water element is lends to the comedy of the, he's trying to figure out the new technology and stuff like that.
Yeah. And that's where the comedic element is done really well is his experience inside this more futuristic, because we're in the 21st century now.
Yeah.
2032 is only 9 years away.
Which is crazy.
Jesus Christ, that's so weird to think. 2032 is only 9 years away.
Yeah.
So from us now.
Yeah.
So to still call it the 21st century, it's like, technically it still is.
Yeah.
It's still, it's the 21st century, but it's this more futuristic look at the 21st century.
Yeah.
But seeing Sylvester Stallone
trying to navigate
experience that, it has the futuristic type cars, which we're seeing with like things like the Tesla, but also some of the funnier elements are like
three shells,
the three shells in the bathroom, which is never explained. Instead of toilet paper, they have three shells.
It's theorized that you use two shells to grab the poopy and pull it out,
so you don't get your hands dirty,
the other shell to scrape the rest,
which
sounds like as inefficient as they perceive toilet paper to be. I think it's more like a germs thing. But anyway, that's what I think Sylvester Stallone theorizes that's his idea of how it works.
Yeah, it just goes along with, you know, what you're being told is the right way to do something.
Yeah.
But if you're not allowed to think about it,
mm-mm,
so you just go along with it. But if you think about it, you're like, this is wildly inefficient.
You do anything contrary to what you're being told to do, it's illegal. Yeah.
How do I sanitize my ass after that?
Yeah.
Anyway, one of the funnier parts of the movie is they're on their way because the police chief is saying Simon Phoenix is around and he wants to, you know, a funny scene though is when he's like, John Spartan is not going to use the three seashells, so he's like, he gets done talking to the older Zachary Lamb, who's familiar with him, and he's been able to give some like context. But he goes,
he's like, "Where's your toilet paper?"
Yeah, he goes over to the ticket mechanism on the wall, like, that will, you know, doles out the tickets if you swear. And he starts just swearing next to it, and he gets five or six, and he's like, "I'll be back in a few minutes."
Yeah,
so
he's like, "That's a good bit."
Yeah, that's a funny bit.
Yeah,
but him, Benjamin Bratt's character, and Lenina Huxley, Sandra Bullock, are going to the Museum of Violence because the police chief is like, you know, Simon Phoenix is gonna set up a crime syndicate, and we can stop him. And he's like,
Spartan's like, he wants a gun.
Yeah, that's bullshit. He wants a gun. He's going to where can you find a gun? Yeah. Like, the only place you can find a gun is like the history of violence.
It's in a museum.
Is in a museum. And so they go to the museum, and you know, he's messing with, he's already killed more people, and Simon Phoenix is now, he's obtained these firearms.
Yeah,
and
the violence display.
Yeah, and
history of violence kind of thing.
On their way there, another element of this future is songs from the radio aren't preferred anymore. Now it's just commercial jingles
from like the 20s and the 60s.
They're inside the car. And Alfredo Garcia, Benjamin Bratt's character, and Lenina Huxley have it on an oldies station, quote unquote oldies station, because they think it'll like help John Spartan feel more comfortable. And we get like the Armor Hot Dog song from like the commercial.
At one point, you know, when they go to the fancy Taco Bell, because they mention, because every restaurant's a Taco Bell, like they won the franchise wars, but because it's like, regular Taco Bell is unhealthy, it's like their fancy restaurants and stuff like that. And Dan Cortez, who's playing the piano, Tony from Seinfeld, was playing the piano, and he's singing like the Jolly Green Giant jingle and stuff like that.
And it's just, it's funny that those show up, but like attention's not brought to it. They're down in the scraps. They're in the underground sewers where the scraps are. And Alfredo Garcia is nervous because he's never been. He's out of his element down there, so he starts singing a jingle. He's like, "Sorry, I sing when I'm nervous."
Yeah,
and he's singing a jingle.
But that's the music of that time is just old jingles from the 20th century.
Yeah. And then there's this firefight inside of the museum. Now back in the museum, between, you know, Simon Phoenix and John Spartan.
Like,
Simon,
you're on TV.
Yeah, exactly.
The mid fight one liners. This is where they felt a little forced and kind of piled on.
Yeah.
But this is where John's like realizing that, whoa, Simon Phoenix is way stronger than he was when we both went under, kind of thing.
Yeah. So they have, you know, they have a back and forth, and then Simon Phoenix gets away, and he ends up scaling to, you know, to get out of the roof of the museum, and he encounters Cocktail.
Yeah.
And he's about to shoot him, but he's he can't. Yeah. So Cocktail's like, you're not gonna shoot me, are you? Because yeah. you're not
I'm your daddy.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. Exactly. He's like, because you're not programmed, you're not gonna kill me because I brought you back yep. for a specific purpose. Yep. I want you to kill Edgar Friendly.
Yeah.
Because
he's gonna start a revolution mm-hmm. and it's gonna disrupt this harmonious society that yeah. I've created. Yeah.
So we see Cocktail's the one who, you know, orchestrated Simon Phoenix.
Yeah. Essentially made him a terrorist. Like. Mm-hmm. And that for the rehabilitation, you're injected with new, like, healthier, safer ideas, mm-hmm. Especially like criminals and stuff,
yeah.
and like skills and stuff uh-huh. like that. He injected him with all these weapons trainings and martial arts mm-hmm. and like system overrides and stuff yeah. like that.
But you know, John Spartan and everybody don't know that. So when they see Simon Phoenix running away from his encounter with Cocktail,
mm-hmm.
Cocktail just frames it as, you know,
you saved my life,
and he yeah. invites him to Taco Bell. And then when they're at Taco Bell, John Spartan sees the scraps coming up from the sewers, and they just want to
rob like the cuisine.
Yeah.
Is like a valet, like cuisine van
yeah.
that had a bunch of food in it.
And they want to commandeer everything. And yep. then John Spartan, in a pretty cool scene, like he takes them all out. And that's when you were talking about when he's yeah. about to apprehend one of the scraps. He yeah. sees food falls out. And that's when it really clicks. But also there's a scene in Taco Bell where John reveals he felt every minute while
yeah.
in cryostasis.
Yeah, yeah.
And Cocktail, like,
Lenina's like, I thought when people were under, like, they weren't conscious.
Yeah, he's like, he maintained his thoughts, his feelings, yeah. and his experience, pain and heartache. His account being opposite of what Cocktail had led people to believe about the experience of cryocons, what they're called. Prisoners are believed to be the dregs and lower beings of society and their humanity stripped away. That's what they're left to think.
Yeah.
He says, like, you know, he's like, you know, I experienced every minute. I experienced the pain of watching my wife pound on
yeah.
this ice block.
Because he had a wife that died yeah. in 2010.
And like, a daughter.
Yeah. The wife we know died yeah. in, like, the big earthquake mm-hmm. of 2010 that kind of caused all that destruction that Cocktail
yeah.
was trying to rebuild. And it's theorized that his daughter is one of the scraps.
Yeah.
And there's a later scene to where they're in the sewers below
yeah.
with in like the scrap, like savage land or mm-hmm. whatever. And I think there was like an extra scene that wasn't put in the movie to where they reveal one of them is like his daughter or something.
They don't put that in the movie, but the scenes after that, if you notice, when Simon Phoenix and Jesse the Body Ventura show
yeah,
up and start shooting at them,
too, yeah.
you notice John Spartan is protecting
yeah.
one person, and like one person specifically,
yeah.
and giving more of a concerted effort to protect
yeah.
her.
And that's when I was like, that's his daughter. Yeah.
But when John, you know, sees the scraps run away,
mm-hmm.
it's when he has the full realization that the most demonized in society are the poor and destitute looking for something to eat.
Yep.
And they're being, you know, demonized by
vilified
by kind of the rich and well off who are willing to conform to what Cocktail is presenting
yeah.
this how this world should be
to maintain the quote-unquote peaceful way of life
mm-hmm.
to like keep the peace and keep everyone
yeah.
in line,
but it's one person's perception of what is peaceful
yeah.
and that's how cults happen.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a cult, essentially.
Yeah,
that's
fascism, you know, it's a dictatorship
mm-hmm.
it's a
yep.
cult. Like,
free thinkers are enemies to Cocktail. Those who want choice against greed and corruption are underdwellers. There's this battle between the old ways and doing things in the new. The new is perceived as more harmonious, but as restrictive to those who are used to the old.
Yeah.
So it's actually, ironically, more restrictive are these new harmonious
mm-hmm.
ways.
Yeah.
Elements of both can be correct and useful. However, overcorrecting completely to either spectrum can inhibit true growth and true layered humans,
mm-hmm.
not mindless, subservient, idealized versions of humans. Humanity is much more nuanced
yep.
than barbarism
yeah.
and harmony.
Let's go the complete other direction.
Yeah,
then.
It's like the only way we can keep peace is if the louder voices, the more articulate
yeah.
in the room, you know, gives their opinion of yeah. what is harmonious, and they can get the sheep to follow.
We need to eradicate everything that led us to that point.
Mm-hmm.
Like
all these, even if it's like perceived things, it's like, oh, it's because, you know, kids aren't playing with educational toys, mm-hmm. or like it was sugar and caffeine and like,
yep.
and, you know, germs and like mm-hmm. all these things that led to these issues. We're going to, it's like you said, overcorrect. We're going the complete other direction mm-hmm. and eliminating, making all yeah. these things illegal.
So when we said earlier, it's that the idea of that the commentary they're presenting is fluid because it's prevailed throughout human history.
Oh, yeah.
That there are people who have a stage, people who have a, whether it's their soapbox mm-hmm. in the early 20th century of these soapbox preachers who yeah. all they had was a soapbox, but they were loud and they were charismatic, or it's people with political power. What they say is wrong.
Yeah.
And they're going to use the most overblown, the yep. most exaggerated examples of things,
yep.
and they're going to take advantage of people who are afraid.
Yep.
And they are going to say, fear this. This is bad. The way that we do this thing
yeah.
is the right way to do yeah. it, even if it inhibits and restricts other people's rights.
Yeah.
It's the shit we still deal with now.
Yep, exactly. And that's sort of what the scraps are representing. Like mm-hmm. Dennis Leary goes on one of his rants. He's like, I want high cholesterol.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be able to drink a beer. Like
yeah.
I want to be able to walk down the street reading a Playboy rubbed in Jell-O, you
yeah.
know, I want, you know, Cocktail doesn't like me cause I think for mm-hmm. myself. I embrace free speech,
yeah.
stuff like that.
Yeah.
And Simon Phoenix is instructed like, go get, you know, Edgar Friendly. So Simon Phoenix is like, I'll do it, but like we need to unfreeze, you know, I need some helpers
yeah.
or whatever. So we need to unfreeze Jesse Ventura. Well, Jesse Ventura plays a character.
Yeah.
So they unfreeze a bunch of criminals
and
stuff.
How do you like the ice freeze?
Yeah, exactly.
But also it's revealed on their, so after the Taco Bell incident, Sandra Bullock, we see she wants, you know, she, with her research of the 90s or of the 20th
yeah.
century, there's
the connection between
sex and
violence.
After she just watched something violent, her hormones are raging and
yeah.
she's a little hot under the collar and she wants to have sex with John Spartan.
Stallone, yeah.
And he's like, oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
She comes out with like these headsets.
And much like the scene we described.
Yeah.
It's like the virtual reality.
Yeah.
You can see Sylvester Stallone make
yeah.
weird faces.
Yeah. And she's like, the exchange of bodily fluids has been outlawed because we had AIDS. And
yeah.
then there was this and
yeah.
this and this. Again, it's that what the fear of whatever's counter to what I
yeah.
tell you. Although there's been so
yeah.
much that has been disproven about this, that, and the other. We're not going to get into that much.
Yeah.
Just do out of, you know, not pure ignorance, but just do yeah. out of, you know, the ignorance of being thorough.
Oh, yeah, for sure. So speeding things up a little bit,
yeah.
like Phoenix retreats to like where the scraps are. He has his own kind of
yeah.
little setup
uh-huh.
down there with his little criminals.
I was going to say, though,
yeah.
After that night, it's funny because that night, Sandra Bullock, leaning to Huxley,
yeah.
is offended that John Spartan
wants to do things the old-fashioned
yeah,
way.
And she asks him to leave, and he does, which is nice. No meant no.
Yeah.
And when he's
in his... He apologized the next morning.
Yeah, when he's in his own room...
Domicile.
He sees through the...
surveillance
disc from the museum that Cocktail... Something's fishy with Cocktail...
Yeah.
And
he's like, I know Simon Phoenix, he would have taken you out in 1 second.
Yeah.
The fact that he gave you 10 seconds, like
yeah.
9.5 seconds too much.
And when he mentions that to Sandra Bullock, he's like, because he mentions also how, like, he's like, how do I know? It's like what we mentioned earlier. He's like, how do I know all these knitting? All I've ever wanted to do since being unfrozen is I just want to knit. What's up with that? That's when Sandra Bullock describes
yeah.
what the rehabilitation stuff is,
yeah.
how they're being engineered. He's like, then why is Edgar Friendly? He's more evil. He's 3 times stronger. He knows all these things. He's a computer
hacker.
Simon Phoenix. He's like, he's a computer hacker, all these things. And Lenina Huxley's like, he's like, who created this engineering program? And she's like,
Cocktail Industries. Yeah.
And that's when they find out that
she tries to pull up his file and she's like, first, it's like the system is, it's like she's not allowed to access
mm-hmm.
it. And then it like goes down the list of all the things he's been implemented with. She's like, this isn't right. Like, why would he be made to be a dangerous weapon?
And it's we find out that Cocktail has masterminded, you know, this whole thing to free Simon Phoenix so he can kill Edgar Friendly, yeah. Which it's, again, the irony of someone who is so against violence wants to use something yeah. violent to eradicate somebody who's a threat
yeah.
to their way of yeah. doing things.
To which Simon Phoenix uses Cocktail to his own end mm-hmm. and ends up killing Cocktail.
Well, Jesse Ventura does because he still can't kill him.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So Jesse the Body Ventura yeah. kills him. I'm surprised that never came up in his bid for the governor of Minnesota.
Because most of my scenes were cut out. I was supposed to have a fight with Sylvester Stallone, but they cut it out.
Was he really?
Well, yeah.
That would make sense.
That was how he was supposed to be dispatched.
Okay, because there isn't a whole lot with, like, the goons or whatever.
Yeah, they're like a means to an end.
Yeah, but when Lenina and Benjamin Bratt and Sylvester, when they descend down to, mm-hmm. like, to the scraps,
yeah.
Lenina's like, they don't seem hostile at all. And basically, like, that's when they realize it's like they're not thugs and criminals and hostile. Like, they're down here for a reason. Mm-hmm. And there's a funny scene where Slot, they're like, oh, what's that smell? And Sylvester's like, or
John Triton.
Triton.
John Spartan.
Spartan. I almost said Matrix again.
I almost said
Jesus
it too.
Christ. He's like, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, and some lady's, like, cooking burgers. He's like, oh, yeah. He's like, a burger and a beer, please. And it's a rat burger.
Yeah.
But he's drinking beer and stuff, and they find, like, an old car. And then Edgar Friendly, like, is sticking him up and, like, what are you doing? Because he thinks they're just cops trying to apprehend him. Mm-hmm. And he's like, I don't know. Sly's like, I don't know who you are. I'm not here to take shit. Like, basically, like, we're down here to they're down there to find Simon Phoenix because they know that the below they can't be tracked, like, in the yeah. sewers and stuff.
Also, they're trying to find out, like, what's the deal with Edgar Friendly.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
But Edgar Friendly tells them all that.
Yeah.
And again, it's this commentary on, you know, the general society.
You live up there, you live Cocktail's yeah. way. Cocktail doesn't like me because, like we said before, like, I'm a free thinker.
Then also, when it's telling when Lenina Huxley's like, they're not hostile at all because yeah. she's been engineered, you know, she's been raised to think
yeah, that indoctrinated.
Yeah, that anybody who is counter to what we're doing, you know, that the little scavengers, the scraps in the underworld
yeah.
are savages
yeah.
just like those we took care of the savage, brutish ways of those of the 20th century
yep.
that, you know, and they're not to be trusted. They're also to be impoverished because they deserve it because they're not going with how we want to do things.
Yep.
But also we're keeping them under our thumb and making things impossible for them to thrive because we are in power.
Yeah.
Again, like with my,
oh, yeah.
like with, especially with minorities
it's
in America.
Just as, exactly. It's just minorities and anyone who's marginalized.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's the exact, it's been this way.
Yeah. There's
been this way.
There's this perception of them, this wildly inaccurate perception of them. And it's this generalization that these people are to be feared.
Yeah.
So they also are not to be allowed to thrive because
yeah.
if they are, they're coming for you and your family
yeah.
and they're coming for your little quaint way of life.
Yeah, exactly.
So again, it's still relevant to this day.
Oh yeah.
But essentially Phoenix is down there. He starts
yeah.
shooting at him.
Leads to a car chase.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they end up in, you know, Sly ends up, he can't control the police car that Simon commandeered because mm-hmm. there's a whole thing. He gets on the roof of the car, throws him out of the car.
It was a cool thing is there's an old 1970s muscle car
yeah.
that they find down
yeah.
in the scraps,
to which they
layer.
Take out of there.
Mm-hmm.
And during the car chase, he throws Simon Phoenix out of the police car he stole and he can't control it. So mm-hmm. he ends up destroying the front of the police station
yeah.
and the chief is incensed
mm-hmm.
and basically he's trying to say you're under arrest and Triton and Matrix
yeah.
Spartan Sylvester Stallone,
that's after the showdown inside the cryo chamber and everything, to where that's where they have
no, because they come out of the scraps land, they do the car chase, he gets all that foam on him.
Right.
That's the safety
yeah.
foam. Drives the car through, you know, into the fountain. The chief does go out there because then the scraps come up and approach, and Benjamin Bratt is a scrap. Yeah. And that's when he's like, give me a gun. Like, you
oh,
give me
yeah,
a gun.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah,
so
yeah, yeah.
I do know what you're talking
yeah,
about.
Yeah, because at the end, they end up in the same yeah. spot at the end.
Yeah.
And then they go into the cryo containment facility after fighting one another. Like, Lenina Huxley, like, takes out somebody and
yeah,
like, where did you learn moves like that? She's like, Jackie Chan movies,
which is a nod to the fact that Sylvester Stallone yeah. wanted Jackie Chan as Simon mm-hmm. Phoenix,
yeah,
but it wasn't popular for like Hong Kong actors yeah. who were heroes in the movies to come over to America to play a villain.
Yeah. He has to incapacitate Huxley because he doesn't want her to almost, you know, to get hurt
oh, yeah.
in their showdown.
And so because Simon Phoenix wants to unfreeze like all 80 prisoners that are in there mm-hmm. that haven't been rehabilitated yet.
Yeah. So they have a showdown. It's an action back and forth. It's really cool. The end of the movie ends up Sly is in a prone position. So he uses one of like the ice crystals that
yeah.
freezes you in the cryostasis mm-hmm. and he puts it to the ground that's wet and it starts freezing Wesley Snipes,
yeah.
Simon Phoenix from the ground up. And while it's about to hit him, he grabs onto this apparatus that
it's like a crane, like
yeah.
a claw,
uh-huh.
like in a claw machine.
Yeah.
yeah.
And he gets onto it and it's circling the facility. And as Wesley Snipes gets fully frozen, he kicks his head off.
Yep.
And you can tell the line "heads up" was added in post because
yeah.
they don't show Sly saying it,
yeah.
and it sounds like something that was 80 yard in post.
Yeah.
And there's the callback to the beginning of the movie where Phoenix is like, you know, if I didn't, I'd lose my head if it wasn't
yeah attached to my shoulders.
Butt. And he's like, I'll remember that.
Yeah.
The end of the movie, he comes out and you know, they learn like the chief learned Cocktail's dead, and he's like, how will we survive? Like, how will we do it? And
yeah.
And Dennis Leary's like, I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're all going to go get wasted and shit-faced. Let's go live it up. And essentially Sly's like, you know, I think I'm going to like it here. Hey, you guys will figure it out.
Yeah.
And
then
he's
he
like,
starts smooching on Sandra
yeah.
Bullock.
And the last line is, so how do you use those three shells? And then the re-recorded version of Demolition Man
yeah.
from Sting starts playing.
Yeah.
And that's Demolition Man.
Demolition Man.
Great, fun action
A lot
movie.
Of fun.
Liked it a lot.
Yeah, a lot of fun. I had a piece of trivia I was going to say, but I forgot.
Jean-Claude Van Damme, Steven Seagal were
that
original
too.
Choices, which
yeah.
would the movie would have been ass.
Yeah, it would have been terrible.
I like JCVD. I hate Steven.
I
don't not hate
Steven Seagal.
I really just don't like Steven
yeah,
Seagal
detest
at all.
Him.
Don't like
awful
him as a guy.
Human being.
Don't like him as an actor.
Yeah.
Refuse to watch his movies.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
He's basically like if Donald Trump became an action star.
Yeah.
Like,
an asshole.
Yeah. Just complete, like, so many similarities between the two of them.
Yeah. So, fuck Steven Seagal.
Yeah.
So it was supposed to be them. I don't know if that was the truth.
Oh, no. Elliot Goldenthal did the score.
Oh, my God.
And there was
it's so good.
And Elliot Goldenthal did Batman Forever score.
And Batman and Robin.
And Batman and Robin.
Yeah.
But there were so many musical like notes and stings and like crescendos
mm-hmm.
during scenes to where I'm like, this sounds exactly like it's basically the Batman Forever
score. It's a really cool score. Like
oh,
one
yeah.
of my favorite pieces was in the beginning when John when John Spartan, after he's done repelling, he drops and it's like
yeah.
and I was like, I like that.
Yeah. There's when Simon Phoenix is having the meeting with all the unfrozen
mm-hmm.
like the eight unfrozen henchmen
mm-hmm.
It's basically I'm like this sounds like Two-Face and the Riddler.
Yeah,
like see in like the during the car chase, I was like, this is just the Two-Face car chase.
And also the when Simon Phoenix, for the first time, he's kicking ass outside of, like, when he
yeah.
finds out he's like a computer hacker and stuff like that. When the police try to apprehend
yeah.
him the first time, there's this added, like, hip-hop, like, bow! Like, these,
yeah.
like, stings and, like, record scratching.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's a cool addition.
In the final fight, like, when the fight starts to climax,
mm-hmm.
all I could see was the end of Batman Forever when he's got to save Dr. Chase Meridian
oh, yeah.
and Robin.
Mm-hmm.
Just like I'm like, this is basically the same spots,
mm-hmm.
like the same portions of each movie has like similar musical
yeah.
kind of stings and stuff. Mm-hmm. So, but it's, yeah, Elliot Goldenthal, it's a great score. It's
such a great action movie because it was produced by action meister Joel Silver.
Yeah,
I mean, we keep saying John Matrix, like, he produced Commando.
Yeah,
he produced the Lethal Weapon movies.
Yeah.
He produced so many of the great action movies of the 80s.
Yeah.
And this, it's another thing in Europe, since Taco Bell's not widely known, it's Pizza Hut.
Yeah, Wesley Snipes, his, like, kicks and punches look kind of awkward in some places because he's an actual martial artist and his like actual kicks and punches were so fast the camera couldn't catch it.
Yeah,
so there's that. He hated in this movie, just Google Wesley Snipes or Simon Phoenix. So Wesley Snipes in Demolition Man, he's got this blonde high top fade, which Wesley Snipes hated, but it inspired Dennis Rodman
right
in ensuing years.
So, I mean, that's Demolition Man. I don't know if you thought of the trivia thing you were trying
I was thinking of the musical score.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to bring up. And then the bits of trivia I just gave were kind of addresses that.
Yes, exactly. So thank you all for listening, as always. Hopefully, as much as we enjoyed the movie, if you've seen it, hopefully you enjoy it too. If you've never seen it, I know we kind of spoiled things.
Yeah.
But you
it's 30 years old.
It's 30 years old. I have the DVD. How did you watch it?
HBO Max.
Max. It's on Max now. You can also purchase it in various spots if you like.
Yeah.
My DVD was from 1997.
Nice.
That's worth to you.
Damn.
I just thought it was cool. It's one of the earlier DVD releases, I guess, because really that format came to prominence in 1997.
Yeah.
Anyway, you know, whatever. Who cares?
Who cares?
Who cares? Thank you all again for listening. Until the next time, be good to yourselves, be good to each other, because why would you want to be rude when you can be rad? We'll see you next time.
This concludes our broadcast day.